This is quite a personal privilege for me. I've never done this before. So, Rachel, if you'd like to come and share with us. After all those years of having to put your hand up to get a word in edgeway.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me okay? Being a Jones, I don't necessarily need a microphone, as we do have quite strong voices, but I want to make sure you can hear me okay. Thank you very much for having me here today. It's a real privilege to be here. To be honest, it's a privilege for us to be here full stop. There are so many places in the world where actually just doing what we're doing now would be risking our lives, risking arrest. But it's a special privilege for me to be able to stand up here today and share with you. We are in Luke chapter 5. So if you'd like to turn to Luke chapter 5, verse 1. Luke chapter 5 and verses 1 to 11. The calling of the first disciples. One day, as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, with the people crowding round him and listening to the word of God, he saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I will let down the nets." When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, I am a sinful man." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will catch men." So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. I think so often we have these passages in the Bible where if we've been Christians for some time, we've been around church, they're the stories that we're pretty familiar with. They're often, they're the good ones, they work well with kids, you know, they're good for kids' illustrations. So we probably had them in Sunday school and, you know, we've known them well. And, you know, at our church at the moment in Hastings, we're having a series on Nehemiah. That's probably the opposite, where actually you have a sermon on Nehemiah and you're like, "Oh, yeah, okay, this is all going to be new to me." This is not that kind of story. A lot of us are going to be familiar with this. And the kind of the main gist of the story is like, yeah, we know where this is going. But it's interesting with all of these stories, there's so much in there. And there's, you know, we could spend a week talking about all the different things you could take out of these 11 verses. Obviously, we're not, don't worry. But so actually, you know, in this time today, I'm just going to share things that have really challenged me and stood out to me from a few of the verses in this story. And I hope that they will hopefully challenge and inspire some of you as well. So if we start at verse 5. Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I will let down the nets." We know that when we're reading texts that report words that were spoken a very, very long time ago, they were spoken in a language other than ours, they've been passed down through the generations and through the translations, we know that we are not reading the exact words that were spoken. Even if this had happened yesterday, however, and it was someone who had spoken in English, in Godston yesterday, and someone had written down what they said, actually, we're reading words on a page. We don't have the body language of the speaker, we don't have their tone of voice, so we would still be having to interpret the words on the page. And tone of voice in particular can make such a difference to how we understand words set in front of us. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the song by the band Police, "Every Breath I Take, I'll Be Watching You." The way they sing it, oh, isn't that really lovely? It's beautiful, he's watching. But actually, you could say that phrase in quite a different way, and it has a completely different meaning. If it was said with a slightly threatening undertone, "Every breath you take, I'll be watching you." Huh, that's kind of not quite so like warm and fuzzy feeling. Actually, that could be quite intimidating. And it's all just interpretation of the tone of voice of the person that was speaking. And as we look at this sentence, we don't actually know what Peter's attitude really was when he said this to Jesus. You know, he could have been being sarcastic. Oh, well, because you say so, okay. He could have been just fed up and a bit tired. Okay, because you say so, well, you know, we'll let down the nets again. Or he could have been intrigued and a bit like, oh, well, because you say so, we'll let down the nets. We don't know. But whichever it is, I think it's fair to say that to some extent, we have not got 100% enthusiasm going on here. He didn't just say yes. And Peter isn't the first person to react to God in this way. The Bible is full of people who have come down to us as godly examples of good ways to live, and yet actually they also initially resisted God to some extent. Moses is a very famous example. His instant reaction to God was, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And then God answers, and then we get one more excuse, another excuse, another excuse, one after the other. We get someone like Gideon, when he was called, "Pardon me, my Lord, but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest, and I am the least in my family." Again, not exactly a resounding yes. But God went on to use those people in amazing ways. Because God understands us, he knows what we're like, and he meets us where we are. Jesus takes Peter's obedience, which may be, depending on what he actually meant, it could be like, uh-huh, or it could be like, uh-huh. But he takes it and he uses it. Because God wants to use us with all of our flaws, with all our human limitations. Yes, he wants to change us and make us better and more like him, but he's not going to wait and then use us. He wants to use us now, as we are, with whatever it is that we can give to him. Jesus could have made the fish jump into the boat. I mean, that would have been a pretty cool miracle, wouldn't it? There's been no fish, click my fingers, whoa, here comes thousands of fish into the boat. I mean, that would have got a real reaction. But he didn't. Peter had to obey. He had to act. And then Jesus used and accepted the level of obedience that Peter was able to give, and he did the miracle. God doesn't need us to get involved. He is Almighty God, so therefore it follows that he does not need us. But he wants to use us. And the blessings that we receive for allowing God to use us is something, to put it simply, we shouldn't want to miss out on. In straightforward, logical, human terms, as an experienced fisherman, Peter would perhaps have expected that responding to Jesus' invitation would expose him to ridicule. You know, his mates are around there, they're fishermen, they know, you know, he could well have had people being there like, yeah, everyone knows this isn't going to work, you're going to look really stupid. And like it or not, we don't like putting ourselves up in front of our peers for possible ridicule or criticism. We just don't. He would pretty much certainly have expected that obeying Jesus would lead him to having to work harder and longer than he probably wanted to. Remember, they've already worked hard all night. They haven't caught anything. They've just been and washed their nets. So by obeying Jesus, you've definitely got to do the hard work again. You've definitely got to go through the whole letting down the nets and da 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 da. And as far as Peter would be expecting, he's then going to have to wash the nets all over again. Because at this point, he doesn't know how the story's going to end. Being obedient to God is not always the easy path. Perhaps socially or physically, we might be putting ourselves in line for criticism. It might not be as bad as that, but we still might be putting ourselves in line for making ourselves look perhaps just a little bit silly. And we're probably going to need to put in our time and physical effort. Perhaps we have to rearrange existing plans. We might have to give up some of our free time. You know, we live in a busy world. We're busy people. That isn't often going to be something we're going to be like, yay, great. I'm going to have to rearrange my plans. I'm going to have to now do something on that evening, which is my one free evening this week. You know, let's be honest. That's just the way it's going to be. To give you an example from my life, last summer, our vicar approached Dave and me and said, he knows that we love to run. And he said, well, what do you think about setting up some kind of running related thing in the church? What do you think? And straight away, we were like, yeah, this is something we need to do. Straight away, we had the vision. So actually, we felt very strongly that this could have physical benefits for people in the church. This could have social benefits, bringing people together. This can benefit us in our community. This is a new way to engage as a church with our community without having to say, we're Christians and we do normal things. And look, here's a way for you to meet someone that goes to church without having to go to church. So we're like, this is great, we can do it. And then there's that thing of like, but actually, what if nobody shows up? It's going to be really embarrassing if we say, come and meet us in the park on Monday evening at 7, and then there's me and Dave. Or even worse, me and Dave and one other person. You know, we were fairly relatively new to the church at this point. We're like, oh my goodness, this could be like, yeah, the end of it, you know? And also, in terms of our time, one of the key things that we do as the group is we take part in the Hastings Park Run, which is, there's a network of these events, take over all around the country and around the world. Saturday morning, 9 a.m, a free 5K timed run. So in our vision, we were like, yeah, this will be great. We'll go down as a group, we'll always take part in the park run, it'll be a great way to integrate with our community. But actually, personally for me and Dave, that doesn't really fit very well. We like to go for a long run on weekends, but actually, because we like to go for a long run, I prefer going long and slow rather than short and fast, to be honest. So longer than 5K, and we would normally be going out at about, I know we're crazy, about 7 a.m. because you can do a long run and you've still got your day. Actually, for us to then go out at 9 a.m. and do 5K, was like, okay, well, we need to rearrange our own long run and we need to... And it's like, yeah, that might sound like a bit of a kind of funny example, but it was a case of, we're going to have to rearrange our own training plans here. This doesn't, you know, we're training for half marathon. This doesn't actually fit with what we would like to do for ourselves. But actually, it's not about us right now. And, you know, actually, it's been amazing. God has been hugely faithful. And, you know, we had 7 and then we had 10. And now we're getting 20 people coming out to be in Hastings Seafront on a cold and windy Monday night in the dark. It's like, whoa. And we've actually heard testimonies in church from people talking about the impact that it's had. It's like the vision we had is coming true. I'm having conversations with guys who would never talk to a church person, but who are a part of the running community. And they're like, you know, they call us the church group, but like in an affectionate way. And it's like, well, that's a step in the right direction. It's only one step, but it's a step. And it's like, actually, we did have to be obedient in that, and we did have to step out, be prepared to be made fun of or just look a bit silly, and be prepared to change what suited us. And actually, God has blessed that. And of course, this is not to say that if we're not spending every free hour doing God's work, then we're not being obedient. And it's not saying that by doing things we're going to earn God's approval or anything like that. But I do think, it's, for me, I found it's an interesting challenge to think about. Are we ready to step out of our comfort zone? What works for us? What's my agenda, my busyness? And actually think, yeah, but does God want me to do this or do this? And if I have to rearrange my plans, am I willing to do that? So are there times when we are perhaps less than enthusiastic about obeying God when he asks us to do something? Do we obey, but Yeah, we're like, okay, because you say so, I'll do it. Or do we even disobey sometimes? Verses 6 to 7, we read, they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. Humanly speaking, they shouldn't have caught anything. Okay, it's daytime. They've been out at like peak fishing time, nighttime, they've not caught a thing, and now we're going out in the daytime. So to be honest, if they had caught anything, you could probably have classed that as a miracle. But the catch that they received far, far exceeded expectations. To me, in my head, I almost have like a Tom and Jerry cartoon. You know, it's almost like that extreme. They've been in the boat and there's nothing, and then you know how that they suddenly land one of those fish that's like so big that like they're trying to hook it, and then the, you know, and the boat sinks, and that's what it says, the boat started to sink. It was completely extreme. Jesus is demonstrating to Peter and to the others that he's not only a teacher and a prophet and a miracle worker, he's a provider, and he's an abundant provider. As I said earlier, God knows that we have weakness and perhaps a bit of unbelief or a little bit of doubts. He meets us where we are, and then he provides us with abundance, abundant evidence for faith. And he doesn't just give us, he doesn't just fill it up. He just does it overflowing. And I think, I know we all learn in different ways, but I think it's fair to say that most of us learn things perhaps more effectively in terms of A, what the lesson is, and B, how long we remember that lesson, through actual real life events, through demonstration. And this is a demonstration that will have maximum impact. You know, Jesus could say to Peter, I will provide for all your needs. Okay, cool. And then he does this demonstration. You know, I think for me, I know which would speak louder to me. Peter might have been a bit sort of wobbly at the start of this story, perhaps a little bit skeptical, a little bit doubtful. He didn't have a resounding yes. So Jesus is coming in and giving him the, for avoidance of any doubts, turn of events. You know, there's no kind of wobble here. You can't think, well, yeah, maybe that it could have been Jesus, or actually maybe the fish were just waiting and they were asleep when we were going to catch them, and now they've woken up, and, you know, this is a miracle, undoubted. You're not going to have any confusion here. I was struck by a challenging quote, well, for me, a challenging quote that I came across, which said, our great lack of faith can be traced in almost every case to an inadequate grasp of the goodness and greatness of God. Our great lack of faith can be traced in almost every case to an inadequate grasp of the goodness and greatness of God. For whatever reason, Peter, at the start of this story, did not fully understand the implications of a command from Jesus. He didn't understand the almighty power of God in Jesus. His faith was limited. And Jesus helped him out with that. He gave him an easy-to-understand demonstration, and Peter became faith-filled. And like I said, I think this is a real challenge. I think this is something that has to be regularly worked at. It's the same as with forgiveness. Faith isn't something that's like a once for all. You don't sign on the dotted line and then it's like, yep, tick box, I have faith. Carry on till the end of my days. We wobble too. It's okay to admit that. To give you an example from my life, 4 years ago, in my job, my whole department was put on notice of redundancy. So there was 12 of us, and we were going to be reduced to possibly as few as two. At the same time, Dave's job was a temporary contract, and he had never more than 1 month of guaranteed work at a time. So we had to have faith that God was going to get us through, and he did. Fast forward 4 years, and now I have recently found myself in what may potentially be a similar situation, with the same employer, but the future of my current job role is somewhat uncertain. And yeah, my instant reaction, worry, fear. I don't know what's going to happen. Am I going to be redundant? Am I going to be okay? I need to have faith. Just because I came through and I had a demonstration of God's provision 4 years ago, I am still human, and we still have wobbles, and it's okay. It's okay to be at that place as long as we recognize it and then we do something about it. Do we sometimes have an inadequate grasp of the goodness and greatness of God? I love how this is a story of God in the ordinary. There are other times when God moves in highly unusual situations, or Jesus performs a miracle in quite a sort of niche set of circumstances. But this is showing that God actually can and will make things happen in something as mundane as the everyday. This was what Peter spent every day doing. It wasn't particularly, you know, exciting to us in the way we live. It's like, oh, that's a little bit different. But it wasn't different for them. Fishing was just the everyday. And that's where God chose to do the miracle. Are we seeking a demonstration of God in our everyday, in our ordinary? Verse 11 says, so they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. Hopefully nobody thinks this, but just to be clear, these actions in verse 11 are absolutely not saying that secular jobs are inferior to spiritual jobs, that people who work in a secular job are not following God as clearly as those who work in a Christian organization. That is not what this is saying. And we no longer need Jesus with us to be with us in a physical sense, because he's with us everywhere, all the time, in and through the Spirit. But I do think this passage offers an interesting challenge in regard to our daily work, whatever form that might take. So for some of us, that may be going out of the house to a job which then pays a salary. We may be working within the house. We may be doing voluntary work. There's all kinds of things we can do. But if I just say work, you know what I mean, hopefully. And in this passage, it's interesting that Peter undertakes his regular daily work purely because Jesus has asked him to. So it's not as would be usual, because he thinks he's going to get his usual material return with which he provides for his and his family's physical needs. He's just doing it because Jesus has asked him to. And I was struck by this quote from a commentator. How long is it since we went about a day's work, not primarily for its necessary material profit or for the enjoyment to be got out of doing it, but primarily in order to please the Lord and obey him? How long is it since we went about a day's work, not primarily for its necessary material profit or for the enjoyment to be got out of doing it, but primarily in order to please the Lord and obey him? I think for myself I could answer quite a long time, a very long time. I think it's a very interesting challenge. Peter's job as a fisherman, his tools, his boat, his nets, were things which would have given him a level of security. They would have given him a degree of standing and position within his community, within like his particular subset of his community. They would likely have contributed to his sense of self-worth. But in order to be a follower of Jesus and a fisher of men, Peter's basis needed to be Jesus. We live in a world where we label and are labeled at pretty much every opportunity. That's the way the world is. You already know some of my labels. I'm Rod and Mary's daughter. I live in Hastings. I'm married. These are the kind of clothes I wear. This is what I look like. We think we have things like our job, our house. Where do we live? What kind of house do we live in? Are we married? We have children. We don't have children. How do we spend our free time? How do we spend our money? What kind of clothes do we wear? What kind of people do we hang out with? How do we? What kind of charities do we support? Do we support charities? That's the world we live in, and we can't change that. And we're not saying we should change that. But the problem comes if we start defining our worth by such things, because these things are all a shallow foundation. I think it's probably a scary thought for most of us, perhaps all of us, to be honest. How would we react if we were called to leave everything and follow him? Or, okay, we'll take it down a notch, how would we react if we were called to leave something and follow him? How about leave something temporarily and follow him? Probably, actually, if we're serious, still quite scary. We're not actually called most of the time to actually leave aspects of our material and physical lives. Some people are, but most of us, let's be honest, are not. But I do think it's quite a challenging thought. Are all these things in their proper place in our lives? Or has perhaps one or two things slipped into a place that actually should only be filled by Jesus? I'm not talking about people here, family or friends. But aside from that, are there things we are clinging on to more tightly than we should? Is it something we spend our time doing? Is it the fact that we have times when we don't spend time doing things? Is it our free evening? Sorry, Mondays are my free evening. Or Tuesdays I do this. Or actually, no, this is what I spend money on. Sometimes we don't even consciously say it, but actually that's what we're doing. Are our eyes fixed on Jesus as the source of our identity and as of our worth, our security? Something which is a recurring challenge for Dave and for me is the question of savings. It's not black and white, and there's no easy answer, and obviously this is like a whole other discussion. But whilst there are many wise arguments to be made in favour of saving for the future, saving for the unknown, having something set aside so if the boiler blows up, you know, all those kind of things. But we are very conscious for ourselves that there are also many, many people in need, whether that's physical and or spiritual. We live in Hastings. You only have to look around Hastings. And the need is immense. And that's just Hastings, you know. And that's not even thinking about the county or the country, or, you know, let alone the rest of the world. So for us, we feel very conscious that whatever we save, we need to keep it in its proper place. That cannot be our security blanket. That cannot be what's giving us confidence for the future. It's not our foundation. That has to be Jesus. So the challenge here, I think, is any part of our security and self-worth built on shallow foundations? To summarize, visually... Jesus said, I will make you fishers of men and women and children. This story is about the transformation of a fisher of fish who was transformed into a fisher of people. He was called to obey God with faith that he, as Peter's sole foundation, would do amazing things through his ordinary human life. You know, at the end of this, Peter is still only a human. He's still an ordinary guy. He does amazing things, but he is still human. He's not somehow superior to the rest of us. And I've touched on several challenges here, which will apply to different people at different times in different ways, but as we seek to do the same. Are there times when we are less than enthusiastic about obeying God when he asks us to do something? Do we sometimes have an inadequate grasp of the goodness and greatness of God? Are we seeking a demonstration of God in our ordinary lives? Is any part of our security and self-worth built on shallow foundations? These are all questions that we need to be able to answer and we need to address if we're to have any hope of doing our bit in being fishers of men and women and children in the places that we live in now. Shall we pray? Lord, I thank you for the privilege of being able to take the Bible and read it and to learn from it. I thank you for the examples of those who have gone before us. And I pray that as we reflect on how their experiences can speak to us and teach us and better equip us to do what you would have us do, I pray that we would take some time to think and to reflect. I thank you that you take us from where we are, that you, on one hand, you accept us exactly as we are, but on the other hand, you have plans to be able to, for us to do so much more than we imagine we could do now. And I pray that if there is areas where we need to be challenged, where we need to change, that you would speak to our hearts so that we can look to all the people around us in our communities and in the world. There are so many people who don't know you, so many people in need, and we're the ones that need to reach out to them. And I pray that you would strengthen and equip us to do that. Amen.